If you'd like to receive this podcast early and without ads, consider becoming a member of the DSR Network. Listeners to this show can receive 25% off the membership price. In addition to an ad-free listening experience and early access, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows via our private member feed, enhanced show notes for selected podcasts, and an invitation to join the DSR Slack community. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code NOJOKE to receive 25% off. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code NOJOKE. This offer is limited and will expire on Saturday, April 6th, so act now. And thank you very much for your support.
This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent. Republican members of Congress facing tough races have suddenly decided having Donald Trump at the top of the ticket might present them with a little problem. According to new reports, they fear having to answer for Trump's degeneracy and extremism, including his tendency to call immigrants not people, and his affection for describing January 6th rioters as hostages. Vulnerable Republicans also worry that Trump has explicitly rejected the support of GOP voters who backed Nikki Haley in the GOP presidential primaries, voters those members need for their own reelection. To top all that off, the GOP's small donor base is not delivering, even as Trump is siphoning off large sums of donor money for legal fees, a problem for the party overall. So what explains this sudden epiphany about Trump among Republicans, and how likely is it that these fears will materialize? Today we're talking to Tim Persico, a Democratic strategist who was executive director of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee in 2022, which was the last time House GOP candidates dramatically underperformed. We're hoping for some insights into how this Trump effect really works. Welcome, Tim.
Hey, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Politico has a new report in which they talked to 20 Hill Republicans and aides and found widespread fears that Trump could cost them down ballot. I want to try to understand which voters might be alienated by all these kinds of things from Trump in the context of the current battle for the House. Are there really large numbers of voters who might be tempted to vote Republican but get driven away by this sort of Trump crackpot stuff? Who are they and where are they? Which races? What parts of the country?
I mean, short answer is yes. There are voters who do get turned off by this. I think what's hard for people like us to remember is that politics isn't the most important thing to everyone in the country. And there are people, who are lucky enough to tune it out for long periods of time. They're not following the bouncing ball every day. And so, you know, when Trump disappears from the news, from the mainstream news, the nightly news or whatever, he tends to disappear from their view as well. Large swaths of voters across the country haven't been dialed in. And now that they are starting to tune back in, starting to become, cognizant that like the rematch is happening, starting to pay more attention to the things that Trump is saying, these things that, you know, Trump has been saying for the better part of 4 years are starting to become more important. And you asked where these voters are. They're everywhere. I think that, one of the places I think of, right now I'm sitting at my in-laws in Bucks County, right across the river in, New Jersey's 7th District. Tom Kane Jr. is running for re-election. He's a freshman running against Sue Altman. That is the kind of district. It's a Biden seat, barely, but it's a Biden seat I think Biden won it by about like 3 or 4 points. But the Republicans there are not particularly Trumpy. They're more up for grabs. And so I think that this is the kind of district that, people start to get particularly nervous about. Suburban, in many cases, college educated or some college educated voters, the folks who used to make up the bedrock of the Republican Party are moving away from them and, are moving away from them even faster, due to a lot of what Trump has been saying, Dobbs, general attacks on democracy. I think that's your, but you'll find, voters of that kind, of that type everywhere in the country. They're in, they're in every state, and particularly concentrated in these toss-up districts.
Now, we saw this happen before. In 2022, you were executive director of the DCCC, which oversees Dem House campaigns. Republicans were predicting a blowout, a win of 60 seats, yet they only ended up netting a handful. In as concrete terms as you can explain it, what was the role of Trump in all that?
I mean, there is the obvious way that Trump affected the election in that he appointed Supreme Court justices that overturned Roe v. Wade and put abortion and reproductive rights at the center of the midterm election. I think also, his insistence on centering insane claims and, obviously false claims about the 2020 election and about fraud, his actions on January 6th, both leading up to and, following January 6th, all of this, basically served to both change the conversation in a lot of districts. It elevated the more extreme, radical, right-wing Republicans, in some cases, Trump literally getting involved in primaries to elevate, people who were blindly loyal to him. And then basically that resulted in presenting voters with a choice between your average, straightforward Democrat and some really extreme elements of the Republican Party. Now, that has become more of the norm now, where almost every candidate is a really extreme, out-of-step Republican candidate. And, Trump has his fingerprints all over that because it has become so difficult to get through a Republican primary without, basically sticking exactly to whatever Trump says, sticking to exactly whatever his latest whim is. And I think that'll continue being the case. He's the party, for better or worse.
Right. Although, let me ask you this. So key to the Democratic hopes of taking back the House are the 17 House Republicans that are currently in districts that Biden carried in 2020. These are Republicans who know how to survive. They're not quite as MAGA. They seem to be people like Representatives David Belladeo and Michelle Steele in California, and Mike Lawler, as you mentioned earlier. They seem to be among those who are kind of keeping it very quiet on whether they're going to endorse Trump. And that seems to maybe suggest an ability to survive some of this that perhaps those other types of Republicans you mentioned earlier don't have. Is that unfair?
Some of the people you mentioned have been reelected more than once. But Mike Lawler hasn't. He's only run one time. I think that you see that largely across the country. A lot of these Biden 16 folks are freshmen. They are untested. They did win one time, in many cases in new districts, in places like California and New York. I think that this is a different scenario for a lot of them, and something that I don't think they're used to running as an incumbent. When you're running as a challenger, you're largely freed up from a lot of the realities of being a member of Congress. You can just, state your case and say, oh, I'd do this, but I wouldn't do that. I'd like to, have this policy, but I'd make these changes. But now that you're an incumbent, now that you've actually had to follow Trump's lead in a lot of places, or you've, gone on the record on issues, or, you've had to speak to the press about, this or that or the other thing that Donald Trump said. Now that you're an actual elected member, the standards are a bit higher and it's a lot harder to run. And I think you're seeing this. I think Lawler is engaging a lot in some partisan politics that, doesn't really fit that district. There are some people who have managed to navigate this pretty deftly over many years, but I don't know. I think gravity catches up with people over time.
It gets complicated, too, when you consider that Trump is going to be on the ballot this time, and so is President Biden. So, yes, the Trump effect hurt Republicans in 2022, but Biden wasn't on the ballot, which kind of made it easier for Democratic candidates to carve out their own identities and cast the GOP candidates as extreme. But this time, Biden is there, and he's deeply unpopular. How might that influence these House races?
Yeah, I think to your point, it does create there are some challenges that come with the Democrats, just like there are some that come with the Republicans. But I think that, you know, there is nothing about what Joe Biden is saying that many of these members have a hard time, you know, navigating around. I think they all have, you know, been working to create their own policies. A lot of them are, you know, in this case, many of them are challengers. And so they don't necessarily have, you know, they don't have a, like, you were with Biden on this, that, or the other thing. So they are kind of able to run as their own candidate, which is helpful. Trump is setting the table in a way that is unhelpful in the 2024 election for Republican candidates. You know, Roe going down last, you know, in 2022, and now him signaling support for an abortion ban of some length, you know, that is setting table stakes on the Republican side. You know, continuing with election denialism, and, you know, claims of fraud and, you know, further conspiracy theories around democracy and elections, these things are incredibly unpopular with voters, and they are not just the policy of the Republican Party now, but they are something that Donald Trump is going to be talking about all the time. And so having to, you know, fit your candidacy and your campaign around those sorts of, you know, table setting policies is just really unhelpful. And we're seeing this all over the country. We were seeing, you know, saw it last year. We were doing work on the local level around pro-democracy candidates in Pennsylvania, you know, places that are deeply Republican friendly, you know, very pro-Trump, that were rejecting, you know, election denialism and other, you know, other things that have become the hallmark of a Trump presidency and a Trump candidacy.
Yes, I want to raise another complication here about Trump being on the ballot, right? So you could argue that the Trump effect down ballot might be even more pronounced because he'll be in everybody's faces all the time, and his legal travails will be even more serious. He may be in the middle of criminal trials, et cetera. And yet, Trump on the ballot could also turn out this demographic of low propensity right-wing voters who won't come out for anyone else, and those people will vote Republican down ballot. So how do you think about that playing out, the pluses and minuses there for Democrats?
Totally. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think that is something that we missed in 2016 and then inexplicably missed again in 2020. And when I say we, I mean, you know, everybody. Trump does have a unique ability to motivate people who don't normally vote. So I think that our election strategy is usually designed, you know, we don't typically look to engage people who don't usually vote, because it's a lot harder and, you know, a lot more expensive. I think that just means that we are going to have to keep that in mind as we design our programs and design our strategy going into the fall, is that, you know, we have seen it happen twice now. He is really able to motivate people who don't typically vote. Now, I don't know that the folks who don't usually vote all the way down. You know, they have the same drop-off problems, meaning, you know, they have a tendency to stop either at the presidency or, you know, somewhere further down the ballot. So whether they make it to Congress is a question. But yeah, it's a real challenge. And I think something that we need to take seriously, because, you know, I think for a lot of us, we see, oh, Trump motivates our base, the Democrats, and, you know, he helps us with persuasion. Totally true. What I think is largely invisible to a lot of us is just how motivating he is, as you mentioned, for low propensity voters, people who don't tend to participate. And I think that has oftentimes been the difference, you know, in some of these midterm elections where they're just lower voter turnout.
There is an interesting question here, why this fear is suddenly manifesting among Republicans about the Trump effect, right? I think it's a combination of things. Trump wrapping up the nomination, explicitly telling Nikki Haley voters to go pound sand, it becoming clear that he's going to trial for alleged crimes related to the insurrection. All this suggests to vulnerable Republican members that they will have no space to appeal to the moderate voters who hate all that stuff, who think attacking cops and trying to overthrow elections is bad. As someone who's been involved in these races, how do you think these moderate lawmakers see all this kind of suddenly manifesting itself? Is this something that they've just kind of put out of their heads for a long time and are suddenly facing squarely? Or is there some other factor here that explains why the sudden outpouring of fear?
I think what I would guess is a couple of factors. One, you're starting to see things pop in polls where, you know, the persuadable voters or targeted voters are expressing some dissatisfaction, or, you know, maybe in focus groups or something like that, you know, your target people are starting to express some dissatisfaction, some uncomfortableness, some unease, or you're starting to get feedback from major donors. Also, you know, people who are likely to, you know, they like the tax cuts, but they don't like the other stuff is not things that they like to focus on. And so if that's what we're talking about all the time, they start to, you know, get worried that it's going to have it's going to have some sort of an impact on the ability to win.
How seriously do you take the drift of young and non-white voters away from Democrats due to disapproval of Biden?
So we take it very seriously. And I think for a long time, you know, Democrats have counted on certain constituencies to vote and to be the base and to, you know, be the backbone of the party. And they haven't always paid enough attention to those voters and to, you know, what motivates voters and, you know, what gets those voters out to the polls. I think that, you know, the last couple of years have seen a much delayed and much needed shift into viewing, you know, larger swaths of voters as not just motivation voters, but motivation and persuasion voters, making sure that, you know, our communications are more broad-based and that, you know, the investment in those communications and those organizing activities, you know, is sincere, isn't like last second, you know, is done in a way that is culturally competent by members of that community. I think that the party has come a long way in the last couple of years. Obviously, we still have a lot farther to go, but I think that Democratic Party understands, you know, or at least most folks in the Democratic Party understand that there is an issue here. I think the other thing to keep in mind is that we spend a lot of time as Democrats talking about how unpopular our brand is. And I think what we sometimes forget is that Republicans' brand is pretty unpopular too. And it's not that, you know, we are losing our base. We're the only people, you know, the only party that's losing some folks in our base. And you know, they're not going to the Republicans. They're just becoming unaffiliated. Same thing on the Republican side. They're not becoming Democrats. They're just becoming unaffiliated, meaning there's just a larger group of people who are just not aligning with one party or the other. And I think that that puts the onus on us to remember that we have to talk to folks and we have to remind them what our party stands for, what it means for them, what it means for their community, for their children, for their parents, for their future. I think we just have to do a better job of it.
Let me ask you one more question about the Democratic grassroots right now. All the stuff you're talking about kind of points to a bit of an exhaustion among the Democratic coalition. Yet at the same time, Democrats seem to keep winning these special elections. And as far as I can tell, volunteering and fundraising is pretty strong in these races. What is going on here with the Democratic coalition? Is it just wandering? Is it just going to come on back, provided the Democrats do the work to get them back? And also, do you take a good sign from the contrast between the motivation of the Democratic grassroots donors, which seems to be pretty strong, and the sort of lackluster signs coming from the GOP's small donor base right now? What do you take from that contrast, all of that?
So starting first with the question about, you know, the grassroots fundraising, I think both sides are having challenges engaging their low dollar donors, but it is very clear that Republicans' challenges are much, much more severe. And don't seem to be getting better as quickly as they claim, nor are they getting better as quickly as they are on the Democratic side. I think that part of the reason for that is that Republicans have been particularly bad stewards with their donors and particularly abusive. And so, you know, they are reaping what they sowed by having very abusive, misleading, you know, predatory practices in their fundraising for a long, long time. So I think they're starting to see the results of that. Eventually people do get tired of that. One special election doesn't, you know, tell the story of the coming cycle. But in aggregate, they are pretty helpful in understanding where the voters are. And Democrats, to your point, have been doing pretty well there. We are seeing signs that, you know, for a while, our party on the ground in organizing specifically was having a harder time, or maybe just a hard time, recovering from COVID, from getting people back out, getting people back out on the doors, getting people back, you know, into the practice of getting together, for the purposes of organizing. And we are starting to see that coming back online. So I take a lot of heart in all of this. That said, we still have a long way to go. And we are obviously, we also have some headwinds ourselves. But I feel like we are in a very good spot right now, where our base is more likely to be motivated. We have gotten proven results in these special elections, you know, not just on the congressional level, but also, you know, on the local level, state house, like the state house race in Alabama. I think what we are seeing, you know, and this isn't news, but what we are seeing is that the issues of abortion and democracy translate across offices, up and down the ballot, and that's not going to be different in the fall. And so I feel pretty hopeful about our ability, provided we do the work. Long way to go, but the makings of a successful cycle are certainly there.
It sure looks to me like the abortion democracy combo is still packing a punch. Tim Perzico, thanks so much for coming on with us today.
My pleasure, Greg. Thank you.
Folks, don't miss two new pieces up at TNR.com. Timothy Noah on how even the quote-unquote respectable right has bought into fantasies about leftist violence, and Matt Ford on the right wing's fantasy of a third Trump term after 2028. We'll see you all tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.